Sore throat. So if the people in the on the periphery can pinch in a little bit, I think that would be very helpful. It is a very, 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 very big skus for our yeshiva to have one of the leading rabbanim in America with us, a Rosh Yeshiva in YU, and a Rebbe of many of your rabbeim, and. To have Rav Schechter here with us is tremendous, and Rav Schechter, we have the boys prepared some questions, and the Rav can say Shivei Torah, you know, whatever the Rav feels, but they do have a list of relatively long list of questions that we'd love to hear Rav Schechter's Torah and the insights that he can share with us.
Make them easy.
Oh, here we go.
Under which circumstances do we say that the law can change because circumstances nowadays are different? That's a very healthy model. That's a very important question. It's a big discussion. Sometimes if you have a Tachanis Chachamim that was introduced in a generation when the thing made sense, and you live in a generation when the thing does not make sense, so then the Gemara has a verse, well, the Dosha, the dominated Tachanis, even though it doesn't make any sense in your generation, you're still obligated to observe. A lot of times it's not so. It depends how the halacha. Sometimes it did the Raisa can change. Sometimes it did the Rabbani can change. It depends how the halacha was formulated. A lot of dinim changed over the generation. Take for example, it says in the Gemara, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me that Yisrael v'achalta v'sovata v'irachto os Hashem al-kev. Al-horetz ha-toyv Hashem al-sov. So the Gemara says in the days of the Midbar when they ate bread, so the only said, Moshe Rabbeinu composed Til Hazan Sako. You don't have to thank the Rebbeinu Shlom for giving you Eretz Yisrael if you didn't come into Eretz Yisrael yet. He gave it to Avraham Avinu, but we didn't get it before Yom Mamish. After they conquered Eretz Yisrael, so Yeshua Ben-Nun composed the second Rav, and Merge Bechor, Al-Horan Salamaz, you have to thank the Rebbeinu Shlom for Eretz Yisrael. Then the Gemara says, V'chalta v'sovata v'rachta v'sosham l'kecha, Al-Horan HaToivah. What is HaToivah? Ahor HaToivah is that you have to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for giving you Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim means two things. Yerushalayim is the capital of Eretz Yisrael. The official capital where the Malchus Beis David is supposed to have their offices. The Rambam quotes from the Talmud Yerushalmi that no other kingdom other than Malchus Beis David is supposed to have Yerushalayim as the capital. Like when they say the American Congress doesn't want the Israeli government to violate the halacha, so that's why they don't recognize Yerushalayim as the capital, because it's not Malchus Beis David. So that's why they always say Tel Aviv is the capital of Eretz Yisrael. American government doesn't want Khalidah, we should violate the dinner. That's what people say. That's the real reason why the American Congress doesn't want to recognize. That's the reason why. So, Ohar HaTayv HaZeh refers to Yerushalayim, has two aspects. Yerushalayim is officially the capital of Eretz Yisrael, the official capital for the official government. The official government is the Malchus Beis David. And Yerushalayim is the Makam of the Beis HaMikdash. So we have to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're giving us Malchus Beis David. They're giving us Beis HaMikdash. But we didn't have a Malchus Beis David until the days of David HaMelech. We didn't have a Beis HaMikdash until Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash. So that's a Din D'oraisa. So the Din D'oraisa Bichas HaMazon changed. In the days of the Midbar, they only had to say till the end of Hazan HaSakot. The Gemara says they didn't have to thank the Rabbanu Shlomo for Eretz Yisrael. He didn't deliver it yet. He promised he gave it to Avraham Avinu and Kenyan, but they didn't get it with oil mamish. After Yeshua Ben-Nun conquered Eretz Yisrael, so then he composed the second bracha. They didn't yet have Yerushalayim. Neither is the capital, because there was no Malchus Beis David, nor is the Malchus Beis HaMikdash. So after David HaMelech established, first he was a king in Hebron, 43 years, then he was a king in Yerushalayim, whatever. 7 years in Hebron, 33 years in Yerushalayim. So then when he came to Yerushalayim to become, made it the capital, then he composed half of the third bracha. Then after Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, then he composed the rest of the bracha. The third bracha was composed by David and Shlomo. It's a Din D'oraisa. But the Din D'oraisa changed. There was no Beis HaMikdash and there was no Malchus Beis David. Then after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and after the destruction of the Malchus Beis David, so the Tanoim changed the Nusach HaBracha. What are you going to thank the Rebbeinu Shlomo for giving us a Beis HaMikdash that we no longer have? You're going to thank him for giving us Malchus Beis David that we don't have anymore. So the Tanaim who lived after the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash, after the destruction of Malchus Beis David, that was at the end of, towards the end of the first Beis Hamikdash, they changed the Nusach HaBracha. It doesn't make sense to thank you for giving me a gift that you took away. So you say, Rachem no, have Rachmanis on the Beis Hamikdash. Give us back the Beis Hamikdash. Give us back the Malchus Beis David. We changed it. These are dinim deraisa that change. Sometimes they're dinim derabanan that change. Every din you have to be kovei, you have to learn Gemara. You have to determine what is the nusach of the halacha. Is it etched in stone? That is the halacha. Even though the reason doesn't apply today, kach nemar, that's how the chachamim established the din. Let's say the din of chalitza. What's the reason why she spits? What's the reason why she takes off the shoe of the yavam? Why does she spit on the floor in front of him? Because he's really doing wrong. He's really supposed to do evil. And he doesn't want to. She says, he doesn't want to marry me. And he says, yes. So he deserves to be a nidui. So she, that's how the Mefarshim Achrim say. So she takes off the shoe like one who's roi to be a nidui. One is an abelus, one is a nidui. He's not allowed to wear shoes. And you spit in front of him to show that he deserves busha and bizyan. But today we don't allow you to do yibam. So what are you about then? What are you taking off his shoe? But that's the mitzvah deraisa. The reason for the mitzvah deraisa is he deserves bizyan. But we say, loy dashin in time of the krov. The din is the din, even though the reason for the mitzvah doesn't apply. In most cases we say, loy dashin in time of the krov. The Gemara had a machleik as satanayim. Machleik as shin and rabbonim, whether dashin in time of the krov. All the Tanaim agree that it's a chelik of lima hatar to try to ascertain what is the reason for all of the mitzvahs. The Rambam wrote the end of the Mar Nebuchim, he talks about Tamei HaMitzvahs. The whole Sefer Achinuch talks Tamei HaMitzvahs. They are from the Arizal, they are from Chassidish Rebbes. Many Rishonim Achronim, they all talk about Tamei HaMitzvahs. Everybody agrees. The Gemara has in many places. Why does the Ganat pay kefil and the Gazlan does not pay kefil? And how come Shor Vesech, Hamisha Bokim Shom Tachas HaShor, Varbat Som Tachas HaShor? What's the reason for this mitzvah? What's the reason for that mitzvah? The Gemara talks a lot about Tamei HaMitzvah. As everybody agrees, that's a chelik of Tamei Torah, to try to ascertain what moral, ethical, or religious idea are the mitzvahs trying to teach us. But the Machlokes HaTanaim, where there's Darshin and Tamei Nikra, the reasons for the mitzvahs, Tamei HaMitzvahs, are they from the Midrash HaTorah Nidreshes Bet? Midrash HaTorah Nidreshes Bet regulate the application of the din. Under these circumstances, the din will be like that. Under those circumstances, they will not be like that. So the Tana Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, author of the Zohar, Tana Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was of the opinion that time of the Krua is one of the Midrash HaTorah Nidreshes Bet. Darshin on time of the Krua. You have to ascertain what's the reason for the mitzvahs. How do we know? The Rabbanim should get together and ascertain what they think the reason for the mitzvahs is. And then once you ascertain what's the reason for the mitzvah, it's a drasha, it's for the midrash HaTorah Nidreshes Bet. Whenever the reason applies, the mitzvah applies. Whenever the reason doesn't apply, the mitzvah doesn't apply. If the din would have been like Rav Shimon, it would have been a whole different religion. The din is not like Rav Shimon. We do not paskin like Rav Shimon, we paskin goy dashin in time in the Krua. Even though you know what the reason for the mitzvah is, the mitzvah, it's a lo klub deraisa. The mitzvah applies even when the reason doesn't apply. But the Gemara has several exceptions to the rule that it is that Shina time of the Krua. When is that? When the Torah says time of the Krua, the Torah says you should bury everybody the same day they die. Kovetik berenim ha-yamu, ki kilos elekim taloi, because it's a busha. Man is created with tzelem elekim, we are bonim ha-mokha. And it's a vizoy ha-meis to leave him over to the next day. So the Mishnah says, what if erineu v'chlovdo? What if it'll be more covered on mace if you leave them over to the next day, or 2 days later, or a few days later. Want to bury the mace in Eretz Yisrael? Sometimes it takes 5 days. There's a plane strike, there's a whatever, there's a complication. So it takes sometimes a few days to bury mace. So the Mishnah says that's permissible. Halana sa'meis l'chvodo is permissible. So the Mefarshim asks, how can it be? But by the Ashin and time of the Krah, you don't pass from like Reb Shimon. So the answer, no, it's not an issue. By the Ashin and time of the Krah. He in the Torah says, Kovetik Mani, Ki Kilos Elokim Tavoi. Whenever the Torah gives the reason, then the Gemara says the Rabbanon agreed that Dashin and time of the Krua. The Gemara has other cases like that as well. So sometimes you have Dinim Deraisa that are Loitlub, sometimes you have Dinim Deraisa where it's not a Loitlub. It depends. In each case you have to ascertain, you have to establish the nature of the Din Deraisa, the Dinim Derabbanon, you have to establish the nature of the Din Derabbanon. Many years ago, about 15 years ago, they printed a tshuva from Rabbi Yashin, very unusual. We should print shoes from Rabbi Yashi. Now they have a collection, 3-volume shoes that Rabbi Yashi didn't print it. Someone picked up all the shoes and all the Torah journals and he made Bayah. He printed Rabbi Yashi and he made money. Rabbi Yashi was not getting any money off of this one. So it's very rare. So Rabbi Yashi wrote a tshuva about Yayin Mevushel. The Gemara has a din that you're not allowed to drink wine that's handled by non-Jew because of the chashash of Nisuch. And if it's Yayin Mevushel, since Yayin Mevushel is not kosher, the Nasach HaGavi HaMizbeach, so the Abdi Avodizor probably would also not use it to be Menasach HaAvodizor. See, if a Nachri is Menasach water for Avodizor, the water becomes also Bana. If you know he was Menasach, the wine Avodizor becomes also Bana. But if you don't know one way or the other, it's Yayin Mevushel, so you don't have to be concerned about the far-fetched possibility. Maybe he was Menasach, he was probably not Menasach at Avodizor. So Rabbi Yashua has a whole sugar explaining why that din doesn't apply to Zman HaZeh. Moshe Feinstein in America, we assume, din in the Gemara, in the Shulchan Aruch applied. So he printed a whole sugar. When did the din and the Rabbanon change over the generation? When did they not change? And it was a very good analysis. And then the punchline was very questionable. He thought that this din, the Rabbanon, should change. That the Zman HaZeh, the din of Yayin Mevushel, Eimbo Mishum Chashash Nisach, should change. Each halachic, when you learn the Gemaras, you'll see which is a light plug derais, which is a light plug derabbana, which is not a light plug. Which Gemara are you learning now? Kiddushin. Oh, so take the motion of Kiddushin. I think the beginning of Kiddushin, the Gemara has, he probably didn't get this for you. The Gemara talks that HaTorah, a girl who is married to a kohen is permitted to eat truma, even though she herself is not a kohen. Eishes kohen achel is the truma. With the rabbanim, they say only if she's in a sua. She's an arusa, minatar, she's a lady, chumir the rabban, she's not lata. Gemara has two reasons why. So Gemara says, what's the difference, halacha maisa, between one reason and the other reason? Kibul masa b'halach. Gemara rabba, if you're so. Gemara has three nachtamim, the kibul masa b'halach. So you see from the Gemara that it's not a like plug the rabban. Whenever the reason applies, then there's a misa with the rabban. Whenever the reason doesn't apply, there's no misa the rabban. 99% of there is the Rabbanon. We're instituted in Salakur. Even if you live a generation where the whole reason doesn't apply to Xer, the Rabbanon still apply. So that you have to determine which Xer is the Rabbanon. There's a rule. Which Xer is the Rabbanon? We're instituted as a Salakur. And which was Vedavka not instituted as a Salakur? The Mishnah Siakim has a very beautiful tshuva. When you get to that tomorrow, I'm sure the Rabbanon will discuss it. The first question is a lot more to discuss about when did the halachas change because of changing times. There's a lot to discuss. When is it considered reform in conservative Judaism that we don't accept? The laws of the Torah don't change. When you say no, of course the laws of the Torah change. In different generations, of course, it's a different shalom. The laws don't change, but the world is changing. You have in Hilchos Bas V'Cholot, it's one sif and Hilchos Bas V'Cholot. There are many simonim in every simon. Has 10 sefer. There are 100 different dinim in Hilchos Bas V'Cholot. Under these circumstances, it's muta. Under those circumstances, pasav achila muta bano. Under those circumstances, pasav achila basav bano. So different circumstances. Not that the halacha is changing. The world is changing. It's a different shaila. It's a different shaila. Sometimes you get a different answer. Sometimes you get the same answer. Someone published an essay. There's a Torah journal called Hamayan. Mayan, I think it's put out now. It used to be put out by the Pele Agudu. Now it's put out by Shiva Chalaviv. So someone published an essay last year. I thought it was 100% right. I used to say it before he published the essay. But we count Sviva. So we count the smaller number first. Let's say I like Bainas. So you say, Hayom Shlosha or Shloshim Yom. You don't say Shloshim or Shloshim Yom. You say, Hayom Shlosha or Shloshim Yom. Why? How do you know which way to count? So the Magen Avraham says it's based on the Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara says when the Kohen Gadol does the Avodah on Yom Kippurim, he does Achas L'mayla V'sheva L'mata. He does Mizrikas Adam. He has to dip his finger in. Achas L'mayla goes like this. V'sheva L'mata. He dips his finger and goes like this. L'mayla he goes like this. L'mata goes like that. So the Gemara says he has to count. And he shouldn't count 1 to 8. He should count 1. And he should count to 7 separately. The Gemara learns that from a puzzle. So the Gemara has a machloikas hatanaim. It seems to be a machloikas hatanaim. How should he count? How do we say achas, achas v'yachas? Then we say what? Achas v'shtayim, achas v'shovash, achas v'yarba. And the other time it says no. You say achas, achas v'yachas, shtayim v'yachas, shovash v'yachas, arba v'yachas. So which is the correct way to do it? Should you say the larger number first or the smaller number first? So the Gemara says, no machloikas, Marki Asrei. Well, Marki Asrei, there were different locations in Eretz Yisrael where they spoke Hebrew differently. So whenever you have a mitzvah that's fulfilled by speaking, so you should fulfill it in the correct way to speak. If you're going to count sphere in English, you should say it in correct English. It should be grammatically correct English. If you're counting in Hebrew, you should count according to what's acceptable practice, the way to speak it. So there are different locations in Eretz Yisrael where they spoke Hebrew. In some locations, the practice would be to say the larger number first. In other locations, the practice would be to say the smaller number first. So the Magen Avraham, who lived in Europe, lived in Kalisz, right, in Poland, he says, we all talk Yiddish, and everybody in Yiddish knows he's saying drei and dreißig, 3 and 30. You don't say dreißig and drei. Alle reden doch Yiddish. So when you count sphere, you say hayom shloshim shloshim yom. The famish based on the Gemara. Now, how many people speak Yiddish today? So those who speak Yiddish, let them say hayom shloshim shloshim yom. In America, nobody speaks Yiddish. In modern Hebrew, nobody talks Hebrew like that. In biblical Hebrew and Chumash, most of the time the smaller number is first. In Nevi'im and Ksuvim, most of the time the larger number is first. So you see that in the days of the Nevi'im and the Ksuvim, the minhag of speaking Hebrew changed. The minhag is that you say the larger number first. So today, in Eretz Yisrael, a modern Hebrew, you say the larger number first. In modern English, you say the larger number first. In ancient English, they used to say the queen is in the parlor counting her money. I forgot about it, the whole pisman from kindergarten, and they have 3 and 30 blackbirds, something like that, 3 and 20 blackbirds. So in ancient English, ancient British English from centuries ago, they used to say the smaller number first. Nobody talks English like that today. In modern Hebrew, nobody talks like that. Nobody talks any Yiddish anymore. Well, those Spiderman come from Arabic countries, how do they talk in Arabic? So the Magen Avraham says, it depends, Mark Yasrei. So someone published this essay, and he quotes 6, 7 Rabbanim he heard from Eretz Yisrael. They all count Sfirah the other way. You don't count Shloshim of Shloshim Yomim. Say Hayom Shloshim of Shloshim Yomim. Whatever it is. I thought it's right. I thought it should be right like that. You follow what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says, the Magen Avraham says in the Shulchan Aruch. It depends on the way you speak. So each halacha you have to determine. Minhagim is a big problem. In Hagen, the Rav Chaim Moizeh has a tshuva. If I'm not mistaken, it's the last tshuva. The Chelu Gimel of Achiezer, Chaim Moizeh was the Paisik in Vilna, who died in 1940 or so. And he says, when it comes to Minhagen, there is no klal of Dovish of Minhagen itself in Yinak Lachim. We have a minhag that was instituted for a certain reason. The living generation, if the whole reason doesn't apply, then the whole minhag just falls apart. That klal, Dovish of Minhagen, has to be observed as only if they made a takan of the Rabban. They have a lot of Minhagen. Remember, I live in Washington Heights, so Rabbi Schwab used to say in Hungary and in Germany there were locations where they had a minhag not to eat chicken and Pesach, only flesh. Why? Because they used to feed the chickens grain. And it was a lot of times they shechted the chicken before it had a chance to digest the grain. And they used to cook the chicken with the stomach. They used to cook everything together. So it's not so uncommon to cook a chicken and to find a kernel of grain that was cooked together with the chicken. A raw kernel of grain that you cook in hot water can become chametz. And chametz with Pesach is the mashu. So they would have this problem every Pesach, some balabas or another would cook chicken. And they would find they have a shayla of chametz with mashu. So they developed a minhag, you don't eat chicken on Pesach, you only eat flesh from the behem, and the flesh, the behemoths were not fed grain. So Rabbi Schwab used to say, whoever had that minhag, it doesn't apply in America, it doesn't apply anywhere in the world today. They no longer spend so much money to feed the chickens grain. They feed them corn on the cob, they feed them maize. Corn on the cob is kidneys, but it's not for mashu. So he said, since the reason for the minhag doesn't apply, the whole minhag doesn't apply in his mind. So that you have to have. There are a lot of minhagim like that that you have to investigate. The rabbonim in every generation have to investigate the minhagim. Whether the minhag still makes sense. It doesn't make sense. Rabbi Simcha Reifel Persh has such an essay in Chorin, his collection of essays. He says, a lot of times there are minhagim that are so outdated that it makes Judaism look ridiculous. So the rabbonim have to be alert, they have to be on their toes. They have to investigate all the minhagim. Does it still make sense to observe the minhag? If it doesn't make sense, so the minhagim come and go. It's not mechuyav to observe a minhag liyamavod. When you come to a generation that it doesn't make sense, so the minhagim fall away. They're all very good questions, obviously. When rabbis in the Mishnah and the Talmud argued, did the rabbi whose opinion is the more leaning one personally follow that view? Of course he did. Or did both rabbis play it safe and personally follow the stricter position? No. The Gemara has in the end of the first Perek in Yevamah, it's a famous dispute. There were so many arguments between Beis Shammai and Yisro. And Beis Shammai knew they were outvoted. So the Torah says, Acher Yav Nahatnas. The Gemara has a whole discussion in Machlok is, Osa Beis Shammai ki Divrei, or Lai Osa Beis Shammai ki Divrei. When the Beis Shammai knew they were outvoted, did they give in and they follow the Beis Shammai? Well, the Gemara says, absolutely not. They didn't give in. Every person should follow his Rebbe. Even if your Rebbe is outvoted by the other, unless the Rebbe made a mistake. But if it's the case, it's not so clear-cut your Rebbe made a mistake. The Gemara says, maybe Eilu B'Yedah Dinu B'Kim Chai. And there are many disputes between Beis Shammai and Zil. So the students of Beis Shammai followed their Rebbe's opinion. One who's neither a student of Beis Shammai nor a student of Beis Hillel, so by him there's a din acharav lahav, because you have to follow the majority of people. The one is the Talmud of the one who says, I hold it's mutter. So of course I'm allowed to follow my shittim. Why not? The Bez Nagodol says not so. So then the Torah says, you're not allowed to go against the Bez Nagodol. But you're not talking about Nagodol. Machloek is Haposkin, Machloek is Tanan. Of course the minority opinion followed his opinion. The Mekalot always followed their opinion. Even when they knew that they were outvoted, also they shamek in the brain, they also followed their opinion. The thing is, you have to follow your Rebbe Mover. You see, I'm being exposed to a lot of different hashkafas and ways of life. How does one choose which is the right path of life for him? That's a very, very serious question. Hashkafa and halacha, everything is interconnected. The different approaches, different ways how to read the Torah. You don't always apply Eilu B'Yedah Dinu B'Kim Chai. Rashi and Tosfos write in Sugas that it does not always apply. Sometimes the minority is just, sometimes not the minority. Sometimes the one who's wrong is just wrong. You don't always say Eilu B'Yedah Dinu B'Kim Chai. So if a person is a Chacham Shehigi Elohim, he's entitled to his opinion, to establish what he thinks is Allah, what he thinks is Hashkafa. There aren't so many, I've met many rabbis, there aren't so many Tamil Chachamim who are Gia Lairo. There aren't so many Gaurim. So if a person is not a Chacham, she Gia Lairo. So the Torah says, Halacha requires you should ask your Rebbe Mover. You have to follow your Rebbe Mover. If you have a few Rabbanim of Hakim, you follow the majority of the Rabbanim of Hakim. So usually, let's say, the Sephardim have their Rabbanim that they look up to, the Ashkenazim have a different list of Rabbanim they look up to. And even within Ashkenazi or the Sephardi group of Rabbanim, do each group follow? There are differences of opinion. So each one, let's say, I'm an Ashkenazi. So we look up to the Chayyadam, the Dalagarnik, the Shulchan Aruch, the Chayyadam Ish, the Soloveitchik, the Majid Feinstein. They have a whole list of 150 Rabbanim. So you follow the majority of the Rabbanim whom you look up to. The Sephardim have a different, totally different list. They don't have the Chayyadam Ish, they don't have to have whatever, Chacham Avadya, this one, that, yeah. The whole list, and they follow the majority of their posting. That's the cloud. Asay l'charaf. You have to pick a Rebbe, and you have to follow his shittas and halach. People make a mistake. They think there's halach and there's hashkafa. So eventually he used to say, hashkafa is also halach. Halach is what you have to do, what you're not allowed to do. Halach is what you have to think and what you're not allowed to think. It's also halach. Halach is of what you're allowed to think, what you have to think, and halach is of what you're supposed to do, what you're not allowed to do. Everything is halach. And you have to get one paisik to decide on everything, because really much of the halacha is interconnected. There's one style of learning that leads you to one conclusion, and the other style will lead you to a different conclusion. So there are people that have a hang-up, they like to be machmer and everything. So no, the Rav Moshe Feinstein is machmer on this, oh, I'm going to follow Rav Moshe. No, Rav Soloveitchik is machmer, I'm going to follow Rav Zohar. No, Rabbi Hutam is machmer, I'm going to follow him. So he's not following anybody. He has a tendency to be machmer. So he's hanging in it as if he's not following Rabbi Moshe, he's not following Rabbi Soloveitchik and everything. He's just following that one thing and the other thing. So he's not following anybody. He's not following the din of Selo Harav. Some Rishonim say that's one of the mitzvahs in the Torah. Some Rishonim say that's counted as one of the Targum mitzvahs that says, Ki follow him chadav ala mishpat, you know what the din is, the kamta v'yalis ala mok, we should go ask a Rebbe, we should go ask the Bez Nagodol, the Gdomi Hador, she b'chol dor v'dor, have the status of Rabbi Mulvach of all of the people who live in that generation. So the Torah says, Kipol min chadav al ha-mishpat, we don't know what the din is. Bekapta or this, go ask the Bez Nagodol. What it means in effect is, go ask your Rebbe Muvik. Everyone should follow what his Rebbe Muvik says. The punishment is special. Oynish misav, that's only if he paskins in public against the Bez Nagodol. But the mitzvah, bekapta or this, it means everyone should ask his Rebbe Muvik. How does one choose the right path in life? And that's a serious question. How do you determine who should be your Rebbe? I say, look around, how do you feel? So, by the old day of the Zohar, they used to believe in oracles. They used to ask the oracle a question by the Romans. Whatever the oracle would answer. By the other Rabbi Zohar, by the Catholics, they believe in the Pope is infallible. Infallibility in Pope. He's the oracle by name. By us, there is no such thing. No human being is infallible. Moshe Rabbeinu made mistakes. Moshe Rabbeinu got angry. The Torah has a parsha of Parhelim Dovish Shatziba, the whole Bez Nagodol. Unanimously makes a mistake. The din of Parhelim Dovish Shatziba is only for unanimously. Every single member, the 71 members, they all made a mistake. The Torah writes, I don't know if it ever happened. The Torah writes about such a possibility. The Bez Nagodol makes a mistake. We don't believe in that. Das Torah, the Rabbanim are infallible. That's an idea that some stupid, foolish people picked up from the Christian religion. Christian religion is not the Jewish, it's not our sister religion. It's Avodah Zarah, has nothing to do with the Jewish religion. We don't believe in infallibility. So we, or some people have a tendency they want to be Mekel. They want to take the easy way. So Rabbi is Mekel on this, I follow Rabbi Moshe is Mekel on this, I follow Rabbi Moshe. Rabbi Hut is Mekel, I follow Rabbi Hut. He's not following anybody. He's not fulfilling Asei Lechavah. So how do you determine Asei Lechavah? So again, so we don't believe in infallibility of any Tamacha. You don't just ask, whatever the rabbi says, that's going to be psak. What do you mean? Well, why should that be? Maybe he's making a mistake. So the Gemara says the psak of the Rabbanim is binding because we assume that they're not making a mistake because the Torah tells us in Tehillim, Sod Hashem Nireu, Risa Lahodiyah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised that he will reveal the secrets of the Torah, Halacha L'maisa, to those who fear him. So you have to pick a Talmud Chacham who seems to be knowledgeable. God never promises he's going to make a miracle. Vayiftach Hashem is pihosan, that the donkey is going to, an idiot is going to come up with the right answer. Baruch Shalom never promised a Neis Nidra. So Neis Nistar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give a divine assistance to a Talmud Chacham who's knowledgeable that he should give the right answer. So you have to first, Aseh L'charan, you have to pick a Talmud Chacham who seems to be knowledgeable. You think that you don't know what marks he got on his bechinas, and he took the smicha bechinas, but you have to pick a person who seems to be knowledgeable. A lot of times, you know that the rabbi is not so learned. So what are you faking? What are you trying? Yes, my rabbi said it's mutter. You know your rabbi is not learned. He's a good rabbi, pulpit rabbi for other things. To lead the congregation, but he's not, he himself will tell you he's not knowledgeable. So Hashem is going to make a miracle, the rabbi is going to come up with the right answer. He doesn't know what the topic is. He doesn't know what the Gemara is on. So first you have to pick a rabbi who's knowledgeable. Secondly, he has to be a Yirei Shamayim, otherwise the promise doesn't apply. Thirdly, he has to seem to be a humble individual. The Talmud says, in many disputes between the Bisham and the Bisilo, most of the time it is like Bisilo, because Bisilo were more humble than the Bisham. So that's the reward that they get because they were so humble, so we should pass it like that. When you graduate college, they should give them the humility award. You need this type of word is because they're so humble, so we pass the law. So the Gemara means to say that the one who's more humble probably stands a better chance of coming up with the correct answer. The person is arrogant, thinks that he's God's gift to the world, and he's going to pontificate whatever he thinks is the right answer. He's not going to think twice. A person who's humble will not be so insistent that this is the way it is. They'll think many times, they'll think maybe the other guy's right, maybe the thing is like that. You have to pick a Talmud Chacham who seems to be knowledgeable, who seems to be God-fearing, and Yirei Shamayim, and he seems to be humble, and he seems to be honest. A lot of times you have big Talmud Chachamim, but they fake it. The rabbi will tell you a kula, even though he knows that it's also tell you kula, because he doesn't want to lose the balabas. He doesn't want to lose the balabas. He knows he wants a chumra. I have an acquaintance who's trying to convince me, Ershel, why do you live in Washington Heights? Says, why don't you come move to Flatbush? He's a Chassidish Rebbe in Flatbush. Move to Flatbush, make a Nusach Ashkenaz shul. All the shuls are Nusach. Smart. He's a chayazik sida shishtiba. Basically, Nusach Hashkanan Shul, you give a lot of shiurim, they'll love it. But one thing, Hershul, don't tell them all the kulis. They don't want to hear kulis. Tell them some chumis. So that's not right. A rabbi has to say, when the Yeskimosha has to tell his honest and goodness opinion. Either the chumra or the kulis. If you're going to have a rabbi, he's not going to be honest. He's going to tell you chumis because he knows that's what you're looking for. He's going to tell you kulis because he knows that's what you're looking for. So that's not right. You have to ask. Yisharis has to be a seil harab. Has to be a person who is honest. Has to be a person who has patience to listen to the whole shayla. There are many rabbanim when you ask them a shayla, before you even finish telling the story, they'll already give you the psalm. They don't even know all the details of the case. If you have one little detail differently from the case in Shulchan Aruch, the din is going to be different. How can they give a psalm before they listen to the whole shayla? Then further, the rabbi has to be intelligent. Sometimes you have very learned people, but they're stupid. They don't have common sense. They don't realize that the case under their nose is not at all the same case as what's described in the Gemara Shulchan Aruch. So when you pick your rabbi, you're exposed to a lot of different hashkafas. You don't know which one should you choose. The issues of hashkafas are issues of halacha. Hilchas Deis. Shaila halacha. What are you supposed to think and what are you allowed to think? What are you prohibited from thinking? So it's all a shayla of halacha. And halacha, there are different approaches. And sometimes it's alienated due to Kimchaim, and sometimes it's not alienated due to Kimchaim. So I say, look, a rabbi requires you have to pick a rabbi, again, with all these qualifications, knowledgeable, humble, yirei shamayim, honest, not stupid, intelligent, and so on, with all the mitzvos. And the al kulam, has to be a person who speaks to your heart. The Mishnah tells us in Hayyus that every the Rambam Chumash is the mark of the Chumash, beginning of Parsha Shoftim. Every beznag, every shegut, every one of the shvatim had its own beznag olam. Rambam is not sure whether the beznag olam of the shegut had 23 members or 71 members, but the Mishnah said there was a beznag olam for every shegut. Why did every shegut need a beznag olam? The answer is the HaKadosh Baruch Hu originally wanted Eilu V'Yeru L'Divin L'Kimchai. He wanted the different Shvatim to observe the mitzvahs in a different way. Each Shevet had a different style of approaching HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And every Bezna of every Shevet should pass them differently for their Shevet. HaKadosh Baruch Hu appreciates variety. The Baal HaTanya quotes such as Zohar, the Pasuk, when Yitzchak Avinu asked of Esav he should go hunting and should prepare a delicious meal for him. And he wants to give him the bracha. So he said, Yitzchak tells Esav, "Aseli matamim kasher ahavti." So why does he say "Aseli matamim"? He says, "Make me a few courses of food." So the Zohar says, if he's going to be hungry, give him another piece of steak. Still hungry, give him a third piece of steak. Why does he need matamim? Why does he need first some gift of the fish and then the soup and then a vegetable salad and then the flesh? And then dessert, and then kugel, and then another. Why do you need so many courses? The answer is that people enjoy variety. You don't just say, I'm hungry, give me a piece of meat, give me another piece of meat, give me another piece of meat. Human beings appreciate variety. So just like human beings say, Aseli matamim, give me a variety of different things. HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks, Bnei Yisrael, Aseli matamim, I want to have you be shvatim. And each one of the shvatim should do Avodas Hashem in a different way. Not everybody has to do the mitzvahs in the same way. That's what the Zohar is saying. So every person has to know what shevet do I belong to. If I belong to this shevet, I should follow the Bezna Golo of that shevet. If I belong to the other shevet, I should follow the Bezna Golo of the other shevet. So today nobody knows what shevet they belong to. But sometimes this Talmid Chacham, he presents his hashkofa. He presents his piskei halacha. And it talks to my soul. I go along with that. It makes sense to me. You can't just pick a Talmid Chacham because what he said makes sense to me. First, you have to have all of the other qualifications. It has to be learned, it has to be intelligent, it has to be honest, it has to be Yirei Shamayim, it has to be humble. You need all the other qualifications. But the Al Kulam, if you have all the other qualifications, it has to be something that talks to your soul. You feel that what he said makes any sense. There's such a split about Medinas Yisrael. Pro-Medinas Yisrael, anti-Medinas Yisrael. How can you follow any psukim of the other person who's anti-Medinas Yisrael if you hold it as whole? Hashkofas Achaim is kaka. He's anti-Medina. If you're anti-Medina, he's pro-Medina. So his whole Hashkofas is kaka. How can you follow? Everything he's going to say is going to be kaka. Everything is interconnected. Everything is interconnected. So this is a very serious issue. How does one choose which is the right path in life for him? So most people are not koch m'shigir lohiro. Most people have to fulfill the din aseh l'charav, fulfill that mitzvah that many Rishonim says one of the 613 mitzvahs. You call him in chadav and hamishpat. The kampel of Lisa, you have to pick a Rebbe mover. Aseh l'charav, pick a Rebbe. And you have to pick the Rebbe based on all of these conditions. Once you pick your Rebbe, you have to follow everything that the Rebbe says. Sometimes in life a person follows for 10 years. And then he says he doesn't think that's for me. He has to move on in life. He graduates. It's time to pick another Rebbe. So that happens. I'm just telling over one of the boys I think about. A Rebbe Gifter left. A Gifter went to Yeshiva High School. BYU. And then his uncle was one of the administrators in Yeshiva, Dean Zohar. So he encouraged him to go learn to Tels in Europe. So he went to Tels. His Rebbe in America was Rabbi Palev. Rebbe Yeshiva. Rabbi Palev told him he shouldn't join any political organization, shouldn't get involved in any politics, just long term in Yeshiva. So most of the people in Tels Yeshiva joined the Agud. And he never went to any of the functions of the Agud. He used to correspond with Rabbi Palev every week. Just last year he published a collection of letters, Mili de Igorif. You have the strangest things. You have Rabbi Gifter sent a letter from Lithuania on Monday. The Parshas told us. And on Thursday, Parshas told us Rabbi Palea from New York had already received the letter and sends him a response. They have back and forth, 4 years worth of letters. And he's learning the Sikh after the Sikh, and he's asking questions on Erevin, there's questions on the Yomis, then he finishes Tzibis, then he's on the Dara, next the Sikh, and the Sikh after the Sikh, the shooting off the Sikh, and the Shver Tzais, and the Shver and the Sinus, we show you, Achrenet, correspondence back and forth over the ocean. It's mind-boggling. They have a little politics also they left in the letters. They didn't delete anything from the letters. So our gift that told over the story that whenever they had a function, so he never attended, but I had to be with them. The students all asked him, what I said, is Rebbe in America, is Kofa, the Rebbe told me shouldn't join any political organization. It means Aguda. So then, after a few years, so the Mashgiach realizes that everybody's going to that Aguda except for this guy, and he's a great Talmud. So he has to come in, how come he doesn't go? So they told him why. He says it's Rebbe in America. So he said he's going to talk. They should send him there. So Mashgiach asked him, how come he doesn't go to Agudas? He says it's Rebbe in America. Then he's kafuf to it, said he shouldn't join any political organization. He says, Mashgiach told me, I have a suggestion, I have an idea. Maybe you should switch Rebbe's. He said, ooh, that never occurred to me. I switched Rebbe's? Yeah, they are, and I go to Agudas. It sounds like a joke. But it's not a joke. What he means was the first couple of years he was still so attached to his Rebbe in New York, he was still corresponding all the years, he was still kafuf to that Rebbe, so that was his Rebbe mover. But after being in Tels for so many years, you're more attached to your Rebbe here than you are the Rebbe on the other side of the ocean. So this becomes your Rebbe mover. So you switch Rebbe's. You graduated the Rebbe from being a Talmud of Rabbi Palev. You're still corresponding with him, okay. The gift used to be, when he was in high school, he used to correspond with all the big rabbis in America. And he had a beautiful Hebrew, so they thought this must be some very learned guy. They didn't realize they corresponded with a young teenager still in high school. He used to write letters, very recovered letters. So fine, he's still corresponding with Rabbi Palev, but he was closer to the Rebbe in Tels than he was to the Rebbe in America. So he said he switched his Rebbe, and from that time on, people move on in life. Their attitude changes. For many years, I'm a Talmud of this Rebbe. Like one of the boys was telling me, he's so close to the Rebbe here in Eretz Yisrael, when he goes to America, wherever he's going to learn, he's still going to be talking to the Rebbe on the telephone. Many students in America do that. They feel so close to the Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael, they want to maintain contact, want to still be kafuf to them. But they may reach a stage in their lives that they'll become so much more close to the Rebbe in America than they are to the Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael. But they'll stop calling on the telephone. They'll switch Rebbe. That's a natural thing. It happens. You move on in life, you graduate, you get a different Rebbe. But a person calls man that he still feels kafuf to this Rebbe, he should follow everything that Rebbe says. That's a very serious issue. Should an American Jew go to the Israeli army today? Strictly speaking, the Jewish men all over the world are obligated to serve in the Israeli army. There is no halacha that distinguishes between one who is an Israeli citizen, one who pays taxes in Israel, as opposed to one who is not a citizen, one who does not pay taxes. The halacha says Halacha doesn't distinguish between citizenship and non-citizenship. All Jewish men are mukhiyah to serve in Israeli army. The only thing is that the Israeli army would send ksav gius, whatever, ksav gius, they call to the Jews in America. But the United Nations has enough complaints against the Jews. So they have another complaint. What are they crazy? What are they drafting the Jews in America? So they don't do that. They don't, truth or not, they don't need so many people in the army. They have enough people serving in the army. Well, we should all realize that, strictly speaking, we're just as mechuyev. Those American citizens are just as mechuyev to serve the Israeli army as the Israelis are to serve them. We should support them and thank them and express our appreciation, our gratitude that they're being moitzias with their mitzvah. There's no chayvus hayochid, every single Jew has to go. They need an army. So they don't have to draft everybody into the army. One of Rabbi Yankel Kamenetsky's grandsons, who lived in America, still lives in America for many years already, he never became an Israeli citizen. He still retains his American citizenship. So yes, his grandfather is in mechuyev to go into the army, to serve in the army. So he said, if a bacher goes to learn in yeshiva for a year or two or three or five, he plans to move back to America. So they don't have to serve in the army. But if you plan to live in Eretz Yisrael permanently, just didn't become a citizen, so that's not wrong. So the grandson went to serve in the army. He was already in one of the schools, I think in Chappelle, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, everyone is mechuyev to serve in the army. But they're not asking the Bnei Chutz Lords to come. It's going to cause an uproar. The United Nations will be tumbling against us. So they don't need everybody in the army. But whoever does live here, she's taka, should serve in the army. Pardon me?
Hasidish and Haredi world in Eretzfeld, who do live here?
About them, okay, to serve them.
Huh? They're Pandir Rabbeim, or they...
Everyone who came to serve in the army. How can it be? They want to throw them on, so go to the Nachal HaHaredi. Nice, from the people. Here's a very interesting question. This, of all people, I heard the chief rabbi Benjamin discuss this question a couple years ago to a group of yeshiva students in Eretz Yisrael. If a Jew is supposed to serve as an Orla Goyim, why shouldn't we all go to secular colleges? So chief rabbi Jonathan Sachs is a very modern man, very nice fellow, very modern thinker. And a big philosopher, he wrote a lot of philosophy. He teaches secular, he teaches Goyish philosophy in the university there in London. He's very familiar with a lot of philosophy. So he said, don't you dare go to a secular college. He said, why be Orla Goyish? First strengthen yourself and Liman Hatur, first become Big Talmid Chacham. Don't think that at the age of 19, 20, when you're ready to go to university, you're ready to serve as the Orla Goyish. First you have to spend many years learning in the yeshiva, according to Chief Rabbi Jonathan Sachs. And then after you'll be there, you'll be married, and you have children, you'll have a family, and you'll be strong, and you're observing some mitzvahs, and you're a shamay, then you can think of serving as Orla Goyish. He said, it's very risky. It's extremely risky. Surveys have been made of students who spent 1, 2, and 3 years in Eretz Yisrael in good yeshivas, and then when they go to Columbia, after 6 months they stop wearing the yarmulke, the pressure is so great. And after 1 year they stop keeping kosher. And then after 2 years there's no more Shabbos, there's nothing. They're late to marry. You have boys who learned in yeshivas 3 years. They're to serve good yeshivas. They're prepared to intermarry after a couple of years. They lose everything. I was telling one of the boys, and my oldest son-in-law is from Switzerland. So many of them from Bnei Akiva in Switzerland. So many boys and girls from Bnei Akiva in Switzerland go to Eretz Yisrael for a year or two or three, whatever, Mishralah, boys schools, whatever. My son-in-law went to Shalavir at that time, many years ago. When they come back to Switzerland, there's no support group for them. After 1 or 2 years, all the learning that they did in Eretz Yisrael goes down the drain. It's like they never learned in Eretz Yisrael. I remember I once spent Shabbaton in Switzerland. They had what they call the European Jewish Students Union. European Students Union, the laws means all the single boys and girls between the age of 20 and 50. So they get together twice a year for Shabbaton, for shidduchim purposes, that they should marry each other. They shouldn't intermarry. So I remember when I first came there, they invited me to come to participate. So when I first came, there was a girl who was wearing tight jeans. So after the weekend was over, The girl came to me and she apologized why she was wearing jeans. When I came first to the whole campsite, even the mountains there. So she was a direct descendant from one of the holy, holy commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. I'll say who, you know her name. Famous, famous. She descended from one of the most famous poskim. She was wearing jeans, so when I came, she didn't feel like that, but when I came, she felt embarrassed. She went to Michlala for 2 years, I think. When you go back to Switzerland, there's no support group. People are learning yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael 3 years. They go to Goyish University. So the pressure is so great to do like everybody else. Unfortunately, many of them lose their whole religious observance. It's a very risky thing, probably. What do I think about women learning Gemara? I'm not so keen about men learning Gemara. What are they hacking the boys' Gemara? At such a young age, and parents all want to bring. My child learns Gemara already in the third grade. Your child only learns in the fourth grade. The whole thing is ridiculous. What are they hacking the children Gemara? They don't know Chumash. They don't know Tanakh. What are they learning Gemara for? The whole thing is ridiculous. So the boys are not ready for the Gemara. I have students in my class, they don't know Chumash. They don't know Jewish history. They don't know who lived in which generation. So what are we teaching them Gemara? I often use Gemara as a pretext to teach Jewish history and to have to give a background. So I give a background from Chumash and I show the different parashiyos. Thank you.
No, I'm sorry.
Thank you. So to learn Gemara, you have to have a lot of background. To me, it doesn't make sense. But the most important thing to teach the girls is Gemara. My mother-in-law, I'll show them, learned in a gymnasium in Europe, in Lithuania. She was from Kelin, a very famous Musadik city. Her father was one of the famous father Musa. And she knew a little Tanakh, she knew Hebrew, she knew Hebrew, she knew how to compose Hebrew poetry. She knew the Shemona Prok and the Harambam. Most students never heard of the Shemona Prok. She knew a little Tuzari. She knew kids of Shulchan Aruch a little bit. That's a balanced education. Yeah, the girls are learning Gemara. They're missing all the other things. They've never heard of the Shemona Prok. They don't know Tanakh. Whatever you learn, it's going to be at the expense of something else that you're not learning. And only so many hours in a day. So it's an avla gedola that we're teaching all the boys so much Gemara. We should teach Gemara in such a way that it should include Tanakh and history and Hashkofe and Halacha Lamaisa. A lot of times in yeshivas we emphasize so much Liman HaGemara, it's at the expense of Halacha Lamaisa. A boy learns the whole Maseches Kiddushin. He doesn't know the ABC of how to get married. He doesn't know what he's supposed to do under the chuppah. The whole tachlis of learning is Lasuk Yishmaitz and Libid Hilchasa. The goal of learning is to know what's Halacha Lamaisa bottom line. A lot of times you get so lost with our pulling with our hakiras. We even forgot. This is the icing on top of the cake. What's the meat and potatoes? Forget about the dessert. The pulling and the shurim, a lot of times that's a dessert. What's the main course? What's the nutrition is the main course? It's a problem. I don't think it's so smart that they teach girls Gemara. Rabbi Soloveitchik insisted that you should make Gemara available for the women. The Lubavitcher Rebbe also said, if they make Gemara available for the women, because otherwise the girls think, we are there, what secrets are there in the Gemara? So they go to the Jewish Theological Seminary to study Gemara. And then they'll be presented with a totally incorrect picture of what Gemara is all about. So Rav Soloveitchik felt you have to make it available for the women. But it's a mitzvah to teach all the girls Gemara, I think it's stupid. I remember there was a father came to me complaining. He was a businessman. He used to be a vice president in the OU. I think his family moved there. He saw it, I forgot his name. This is years ago. Comes to me one day in yeshiva with a complaint, as if I run the whole yeshiva, that his daughter is in Central, the high school at the yeshiva university has in Queens. And last year, she was in a regular class. So they taught the Parsha Shavua, they taught the kids of Shulchan Aruch, and whatever else they taught. So he was a businessman, he was never home. Shabbos and Yontif, he was home. So on Shabbos and Yontif, the daughter would say over the kids of Shulchan Aruch, and the Parsha Shavua was good for her, it was good for him, it was good for the God's promise. This year, he tells me, his daughter is in the advanced track. So no machumish, no madir. They teach you Gemara. And which Gemara is Sanhedrin? Which parag in Sanhedrin? He tells me, parag ben Sarah Amara, shalahayu v'luyas aliyas. That's what the Balabas tells me. Parag ben Sarah, shalahayu v'luyas aliyas. He says, what is she needed for? What do I need it for? What does anybody need it for? He wants to go back to the Parshas HaShavua with the dinim. That's what we need, Parshas HaShavua with the dinim. It's ridiculous. The women are clamoring they want equal rights. As if the men were treated so nicely, we teach the men Gemara and they were cheating the women. The men should clamor that we want the curriculum that the women have. The women in Europe had a better curriculum than the men. They learned the Shemana Prokim and the Tanakh and the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. They learned Hebrew. The men don't know how to spell Hebrew. They don't know how to write Hebrew. They don't know how to talk Hebrew. The women know better than the men. The men should be clamoring for the curriculum of the women, not that the women should be clamoring. This whole shtick that the women want the equal rights, this whole from the feminist movement. It's ridiculous. What age should a Jew start dating? In the first page in Ebenezer, it says that the mitzvah really begins at the age of 18. So the commentary on the side of Shulchan Aruch, the Bishmur, the Estekashi, but when you're bar mitzvah, you know, Shlosh Esther in the mitzvah, you should be mechuyif to get married and have children right away after your bar mitzvah. What are you waiting for? So he says, no, getting married has to fit in with the rest of your life program. You're going to get married at the age of 13, when you're going to learn, when you're going to prepare yourself for a parnasa. You can't ruin your life. So you have to be prepared to get married. At the age of 13, you're not ready. At the age of 18 today, people are not ready to get married either. You have to wait a while till you're totally ready. I remember when I graduated college, that June, someone called my parents and they had a shidduch for me. So I came home. My mother says, call the girl, make a date. I said, Mom, I'm not interested in getting married. She said, call the girl, make a date. I said, I'm not interested. My mother called the phone. And she said, get on the phone. Talk to the girl. I talk on the phone. I made a date. I met the girl. I spoke to the father in learning. Father was a Rebbe in one of the yeshivas in New York. Very pleasant. Took the girl out on a date. I came back. The father was a nice guy. I wasn't interested in getting married. I had no desire to get married. So I told back to Shach, I'm not interested in getting married. So around 2 or 3 years went by. After I graduated college, I read, that must have been 2 or 3 years, I remember. Then I said I was interested in getting married. Until then, I wasn't interested. I was out of money. Then when I was interested, that girl was still single. And the parents found out that I'm starting to date. So someone contacted me, I should take out the girl again. So I took her out another time. Not for me. Okay, she married someone else. Very nice. Yeah. You have to be interested in getting married. You have to realize when you get married, you're going to have responsibilities. You can't get married at the age of 13. You can't get married at the age of 18 either. How are you going to support yourself? Unless your parents are prepared to support you.
Didn't you just say we can't go to college? So if we can't go to college, how are we supposed to support ourselves?
Who said you can't go to college?
Didn't you say beforehand that we should go to college, go to secular college? Sorry.
Don't go to a Goyish college. There are not Jewish colleges in the world that you can be safe in a Jewish college. Don't go to a Goyish college. I went to college. I went to a Jewish college. Interesting, what is the hashkafic problem with premarital sex? Hashkafic problem. problem. For non-Jews, it's destroying the whole world. The non-Jews are destroying the whole world. That's the shame. This is a very important question. Should you study Gemara Bikiyas or should you emphasize it? That's a big problem. So the ancient fathers used to say, in the name of Rav Chaim, sorry, the name of his grandfather, said that if a person covers a lot of the kids, he learns a lot of Gemara, but he doesn't really understand it. So what did he learn? What did he learn? He doesn't understand it. He learned the Iyum. He just learned 3 block Gemara all year long. What do you mean the Iyum? A deep Havana on what? What does he have on? You have to have a happy balance. Rabbi Soloveitchik, it's never helpful this. You have a Seder and Eon and a Seder and Bikiyus. He thought all the Siddurim should be a balance between Bikiyus and Eon. His understanding of Eon is, everybody talks about you have to have a Derech Haloni. What do you mean a Derech Haloni? So Derech Haloni means when you know 100 dinim, then you can, when you see a forest in front of you, so you want to see, how are you going to travel through the forest? You go to Derech, how do you get through this? So which halachas, you have 100 halachas, so which halachas are similar, which halachas are not similar. A lot of times the halachas, even though the wording is exactly identical, they didn't have nothing to do with each other. The Masoras HaShas will give you a cross-reference every time this expression appears in the Gemara, but in all the other Gemaras has nothing to do with this Gemara. The terminology is the same, and the meaning is totally different. Then you have a lot of times the wording is totally different, but it's exactly the same thing, exactly the same principle, in 12 different Gemaras. It means the same. So that's what the Derech HaLearning is. Derech HaLearning doesn't mean you take one din and you philosophize and you analyze it to death. And what do you analyze it? If you have 10 dinim, so you have to try to figure out if there seem to be contradictions. The person asks, is a contradiction? So what's the rule? Which is the rule? Which is the exception to the rule? If you have 1,000 dinim, you have to try to discern a pattern. Which dinim are related? Which dinim are not related? That's what it means in there. So he didn't like. There are many yeshivas they used to have. The shir is be'iyun. You go very slowly, and then there would be the kids. They would run through people. He thought that it's not healthy to learn the same thing all day long. You're going to learn Bar Metzia in the morning, the afternoon, and night. It's going to be coming out of your ear. So he thought you should switch off to a different Masechta. Morning, learn Bar Metzia. Afternoon, learn Gittin, and night, learn Erevin. Whatever. You should learn three different things, two or three different things. Not to learn the same Masechta all the time. But he used to give an Iyun Shir. He used to cover 60 blot. In the good years when he was up, he would cover 60 blot a year. He would discuss every single topic. He would discuss the topics lightly and give an analysis of Rashi and Tosfos and the Ramamcha. He wasn't interested in all the Rishonim. He had all the Rishonim, wasn't interested in all the Rishonim. That's a new shtick now. You have to read every single Rishonim on the page. You never cover any ground there. He was only interested in Rashi, Tosfos and the Rambam because we have these Rishonim on all of Shas. So you can compare what they say here to what they compare with what they write in other Masechtas. Once in a while he would study a Rashba. Once in a while he was there. There's a famous Rana, a famous Rosh. Okay, it's called in the Shulchan Aruch. So he'll discuss the Rashba. And mainly he wasn't interested. He was just interested in Rashi, Tosfos and the Rambam Shitas. When I was in the Shiras already, he was older, so he only covered 40 blot a year. He didn't cover 60 blot a year. In 40 blot a year, that was the morning Seder. He would have the morning Seder, he would prepare, and he would cover 40 blot a year. And the afternoon he called, he should also cover 40 blot a year to cover everything. He didn't think you should have the keys to cover fast. He thought you should learn Gemaras properly. Now the system has changed, but it's sometimes a big mistake. People learn the keys, they just go so quickly. It goes in one ear and out the other, and nothing is retained. So what do you gain? What do you gain by just zooping up Gemara, by just reading it like Ashrei? We shouldn't read Ashrei like that either. You should learn the Pirush Amilus and Ashrei. If you don't know, so use an English translation of the Siddur. Learn the Pirush Amilus and Ashrei. It doesn't make sense just to read Gemara quickly, just become familiar with the words. Remember, he used to be a retired painter from Droyers. Yeshiva University is not far from Droyers community. So there was a balabas. He was not a yekid. He was a Polish. He damned in Droyers. He started coming to Yeshiva. He knew me from Droyers. He used to come to my shiur every day. So I didn't know how much he understood. He was an elderly gentleman in his 80s. So I always stayed in Yeshiva after Mincha. I stayed on to learn in the Kollel in the afternoon. So one day I had to go home after Mincha. So I was walking him home. So I didn't want to ask him how much he understands, so he tells me, Rabbi Shah, I don't really understand. When you give I don't understand what you're talking about. But you know, in the Russian army, he came from Russia, and I said, in the Russian army, you had to know the names of all the generals and all the officers. That's what he says. And they test you. You had to know who's the chief officer, who's the chief general, who are the lieutenants and everything. Because when he comes to the Royal Marines, he thinks they're going to ask him, what are the names of the generals? And he says he doesn't know. So he comes to the Shir just to familiarize himself with the names of the generals. He knows there's a Rambam and a Rashba and a Rambam. He doesn't know what they said, but he knows that these are the generals. He knows that there's a Tarfon, or there's a Manazari, or a Kiva, there's a Bible, whatever. He just comes to hear the names of the generals. That's not learning. Okay, prepare for the Olam Haris, and give him a test for the names of the generals. A person is going to read Gemara to learn Gemara Bikir, so he'll just remember the names of the Tanoim and the names of the Amoraim. He's not going to remember what the Tochen is, what the content is, what the deal is. That's not called learning. Magen Avraham says that the person recites the Zalman Koyman, he doesn't understand what he's saying. There's no Kiman Mitzvah. When we read Tanakh, We tell out the really came chaim. So even if you don't understand what it says, you're reading Torah Shabbat itself. So it's a kima mitzvah if you don't understand. If you do understand, it's a better kima mitzvah. But you read Mishnayos, you read Gemara, you don't understand it. There's no kima mitzvah. Torah Shabbat people wants to be world of ideas. You have to understand what the ideas are. If you want to have such a system, so Rachel was not happy with that whole system. I have the keys as opposed to eel. He thought everything should be mild eel. Should be a combination. Should be a combination of both. This Shabbos, I was sitting next to someone and they wanted a meal, so he tells me that in the recent volumes they just put out volume 9 of the Igros Moshe, about 2 months ago in America. So he tells me in the end of this sefer they have a collection of letters by Moshe Feinstein and the Yom Hashkofa. So one of the letters is about Derech Halim. So he tells me that Moshe Feinstein writes there in the letter, you can have an eon sefer and want to go as slow as you want. But the key is say that the rest should be 200 baud a year. Okay. Now Shach always used to come up. Shach always gave shiurim the eon. He was always complaining that the yeshivas are going too slow. So everything that Rav Shach said, they all follow, except for that. That they never listened to. And he has this repeated in his letters, in a collection of letters that was printed during his lifetime. He kept on writing letters and complaining about that, that it's not right that they go so slowly in the yeshivas. I remember every year we give the chinas to the people who want to join the Masmidim program in the yeshiva. So we once fahared a boy who learned Baba Kama 2 years in a row. He learned in one of the yeshivas, one of these great yeshivas, American yeshivas. Then the next year he learned in the Mir yeshiva and he said, learn Baba Kama 2 years in a row. So we fahared him. He didn't know anything about Baba Kama. He only knew 15 blocks. So we asked him, what kind of a learning is that? 2 years and you don't know Baba Kama. He says, his Rebbe, he learned for Rav Moshe Barbier, he learned for Rav Nachum, Rav Nachum learned for Rav Baruch Be'er, and that's Rav Baruch Be'er. I said, what are you, crazy? Rav Baruch Be'er. He gave shiur about 15 blot. But the boys learned the whole Masechta on their own. How can you, don't understand the 15 blot. But you don't know the rest of Baba Kama, you know nothing. This is ridiculous. People think that that's learning. That's a late summons. You have to cover ground. You have to, the whole idea of learning, the whole idea of a derech havana means you know 1,000 dinim, and you know which dinim are connected, which dinim are not connected. But you only know 5 dinim. So what is there to discuss? There is no derech. You're not going from anywhere to anywhere. All the questions are there. Here's an interesting question. Just because God created me, why do I have to do what He wants me to do? It's an interesting question. The Chumash has an expression that Hashem is Konei Shamayim Ba'aretz. Rashi in his commentary on Chumash writes 2 levels of interpretation. Konei means that God created the world, and Konei means He owns a kingdom. He owns the world. So Rav Soloveitchik the major obviously is to say, Hashem owns the world because He created the world. Whoever creates Shvach, from the Mokker, from the Rambam, from the Yishalmi, whoever creates Shvach acquires ownership of that Shvach. Hashem created the world, so He owns the whole world. So we belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, legally, He owns us, because He created us. So therefore, if I own something, I have the right to do whatever I want with it. So God created us, and He owns us. So we are obligated to listen to everything He says, because we are His possession. Whoever has bias on something is the Baal HaBos. Let's see, there are a lot of questions here. Well, modern orthodoxy survive. If they'll observe mitzvahs, then they'll survive. What is it, modern orthodoxy? It's a contradiction in terms. Orthodoxy means orthodoxy means we believe that the Torah doesn't change. Modern means that we're up to date. So how can it be modern orthodoxy? That's a contradiction. So the answer is not a contradiction. The Torah doesn't change, but the world keeps on changing. So we explained before that because the world keeps on changing, so sometimes the Shaila is a different Shaila, so you have to come up with a different answer. That's what modern orthodoxy means. A lot of people think that modern orthodoxy means you make a compromise. Instead of keeping 613 mitzvahs or zeros, you keep 310 mitzvahs. So that's not modern orthodox. That's not orthodox. That's not orthodox. And it is has such a tshuva. What does he say about centrist Judaism? He says, what do you mean centrist? You keep 305 mitzvahs? That's not Orthodox, that's Reform. Orthodox means you observe all of the mitzvahs of Torah. If modern Orthodox means that you realize that some of the dinim in the Shulchan Aruch, because we live in a different generation, so it's a different shaila, it's a different tshuva, that's where Moshe should find some tshuvas. That's all the tshuvas from all the generations. The Chasam Sofer's tshuvas, the Yehuda's tshuvas. All the tshuvas are like that. How do the old halachas apply to modern situations? The world is always changing. So the shaila is a different shaila. That's what the tshuvas in every generation are dealing with there. So if that's what the modern Orthodox will understand, you want to observe all the Dina HaTorah, but how does Dina apply in our generation? It's fine with that. Modern Orthodox will survive. But if they're going to define modern Orthodox as making compromises, keeping a centrist position, means you only keep 305 of the 613 mitzvahs. So then it's not Orthodox. It's not going to survive. Remember once Rabbi Schwab, the Chanukah used to be the rabbi in Breuers. So he was telling over, he used to learn after Shachar, so he used to learn Kitzur Shulchan Aruch a little bit, and someone would say a Kaddish Derabban. One of the Avelim would say a Kaddish Derabban. So I remember on one occasion he was saying, the Gemara says you should put on a garter. Because in the days of the Gemara, fully, formally dressed was with a big sesh. He said today, fully, formally dressed means to wear a jacket and a tie. So he told the story that he heard that once a Chassidish person went to business one day, he got to take his garter with him. The guy was going to have to daven mincha. So then when he had daven mincha, he didn't have a garter. He took off his tie and he made a garter out of the tie. So he said, what a fool the man is. The din of the Gemara is not a din a garter, la garter, la garter. A garter means you have to be fully, formally dressed. So this man is not formally dressed. The garter is a tie. You don't take a tie and make a garter out of it. Today nobody wears a sash. You have to understand what's the kabbalah they did. Gemara says, "Hikar lekros alakecha." So you have to be fully, formally dressed. You have to know. Take if you take the din of the Gemara literally, it's a misrepresentation of the halacha. You have to understand what are the dinim in the Gemara. A lot of dinim like that. You have to know how to apply the dinim in the Gemara. Not all the dinim are intended. The dinim are not frozen. The halacha isn't frozen. The halacha in every generation. The dinim don't change, but the circumstances keep on changing. So the maybe it's a different shayla, you come up with a different answer. That's what all the tshuvas are all about. All the Ramosha finds all the tshuvas from all the generations. They're trying to figure out how do you apply all the ancient dinim to contemporary situations. The Torah doesn't change, but the world is changing. So it's a different shayla, you need a different tshuva. Why can't we use electricity on Shabbos if we're not really making a fire? If you turn on an electric bulb that has a filament in it, so the Raman quotes from the Tosefta that that's a violation of Havara. If you heat metal to the clothes, that's considered Havara. So we assume we follow up Chaim Moser that that's a Melacha Deraisa Avesh. If you plug in an electrical appliance like a fan or like a refrigerator, so that's not Havara. So that's a different shayla. It's not going to be Eish. It may or may not be Makabat Patish, it may or may not be Bonan, maybe it's only the Rabbanan, that's a shayla. Many have that it's only Makabat Patish and the Rabbanan. But if you turn on an electrical bulb that has a filament, we assume that that is Eish Deraisa. Rabbi Chaim Moser wanted to emphasize this, because the Maharsham is a big paisik in the early 1900s, and he was of the opinion that turning on an electric bulb is only Eish Deraisa on Shabbos. The reason he gave was because electric bulbs didn't exist in the days of the Mishkan. It can only be a Malacha Deraisa if the thing existed in the days of the Mishkan, so it's represented with what the Malacha that was done in the Mishkan. So Abchamazah didn't think that that made any sense, so he wanted to emphasize that he thinks that using electric bulbs constitute a Malacha Deraisa. So he used to say, Bar Meir Hesha, an electric bulb, to be Mahad. Everybody should realize that he holds that it's a Malacha Deraisa. Why do I wear tchelos? Torah says you have to wear tchelos. You have an opportunity. My father, my grandfather didn't have any tchelos available. If my father would have had tchelos, he would have worn tchelos also. What do you mean? You're going to follow many of his envy of them. But the stipler writes, why doesn't he observe Yom HaAtzmaut? He says, I looked in the Shulchan Aruch, backwards and forwards. I didn't find any simon about Yom HaAtzmaut. He doesn't observe Yom HaAtzmaut. What kind of a joke is that? He's making fun of the people who want to observe Yom Ha'atzmaut. Of course you're not going to find a Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch was written in the 1500s. You're not going to talk about Yom Ha'atzmaut. But of course my father, my grandparents didn't wear tefillin. They didn't have it available. But if you have it available, why shouldn't you wear tefillin? If you're not sure if it's tefillin. So we usually say Safek Derais of the Chumrah. Why shouldn't you say Safek Derais of the Chumrah? So some came up with a very ingenious idea. And maybe Safek Derais of the Chumrah only applies if after you'll do it, you'll know for sure that you have fulfilled the mitzvah. I shook a lulav and I'm not sure whether the lulav and the nasig were good. But let me shake again to make sure that I'll be yotzei for sure. So after you'll do the Chumrah, you know for sure that you have fulfilled the mitzvah. But over here, even if you use a chavis, if you're not sure that it's authentic, so even after doing it, you won't know whether he did the right thing or not. So that's a very interesting story. So Menachem Zember, who was killed by the Nazis, he was a guy from Poland, he writes that's a nice story. Some poskim say like that, but in Shulchan Aruch, that opinion has not been accepted. We pass on our law there. That something the rest of the Chumri means even if after you'll do it, you still won't be sure that you didn't do it. So you still say something the rest of the Chumri. So I thought it's at least a suffix. That the trailers that they came up now in the authentic trailers. But they suffered the rise of the Chumrah. Well, there are bottom in America, the Rybelski from Torah Das, always gives Shurim Halach Lamaisi. In Torah Das, he gives the Shem Shulchan Aruch. He has a 5-6 year program. He doesn't want to teach his Shulchan Aruch, I think, in Torah Das. So he's always called upon to speak in public about Halach and topics, and they publish a lot of what he says. So about 3 years ago, two, 3 years ago, they published in his name that Tchelus, the new Tchelus, is Vada incorrect. We should reinvestigate. Maybe the Radina Rebbe's Tchelus is correct. Okay. So the people from the Tchelus Chever got to him, and they showed him absolutely that he's dead wrong. He started wearing Tchelus. He started wearing that. But he's embarrassed to say so in public. Chochem should be by Dalamis. He should have admitted their namesake. He's back to say some public. So he told me he only wears tchelis on Shabbos, where he wears a long rock, he wears a long jacket. He doesn't wear tchelis on his talus. He doesn't want anybody to see that he's backing out to what he said, Khalil. So he only wears tchelis on his conference on Shabbos when he wears a long jacket, so nobody will see. So how do I know? The guy who tied the tchelis called me up on the phone, and he told me. I should know that Rabadowski gave in to him, and he backed out, and he is wearing tchelis. It's at least a something there. I said, I don't understand why people are so touchy about it. What do Rabbi Soloveitchik think about co-ed education? I don't know. Firsthand. I just know what other people told me. Maimonides is still co-ed, I don't know, that's it. So I heard from two people. I was telling one of the boys here before. I heard from Rabbi Soloveitchik's son-in-law, Professor Twersky, who passed away. I was once sitting next to him, and I'm thinking of Ben. And he told me that they need, can I recommend, a learned boy from the Kolo to come teach Gemara in Maimonides. So I told him, the school is co-ed, and you're not going to get a good learner. Whoever's going to go is going to be a very weak learner. The boys are not going to go. So he said, you're not going to succeed in getting a good Rebbe. It's going to be a waste of time. He's not going to be a good Rebbe. So he said, tell the boys in my name that I always misunderstood my father-in-law. And so Rachel, after his wife passed away, moved in with the first person. He lived there for quite a few years. So he said, tell the boys I misunderstood my father-in-law. I always thought that his position was that it's proper lachatila to have co-education. He says, and recently when Rav Soloveitchik was already old, at that time Rav Soloveitchik, it was an opinion of them, so Professor Twersky was to my right and Rav Soloveitchik was to my left, and the Rav couldn't see the chicken, he couldn't cut the chicken. I had to cut it for him, and he kept on dropping the chicken on the plate. He was already old and very feeble. So Professor Twersky told me, his father-in-law told him, as long as he was healthy and he was supervising the school, so he wasn't worried about the co-education. Now that he's old, he's not able to supervise it. He wanted them to separate the boys and the girls. And he told me they started raising money, and of course the portion of money, to separate the boys and the girls. He said they started raising money, so I should tell the boys and the girls that they're planning to separate the boys and the girls, and I should get them a good tomahawk. So I got him a day. I told this over to a few boys and the girls. So one of the boys went, Rabbi Baruch Goldman, big tomahawk. He went to Boston, became a rabbi, on the understanding that they're going to change the school. They never changed the school. They never put enough money up to change the school to separate the classes. So this Rabbi Goldman, I think he didn't send his children to my mom. He sent his children to the Lubavitcher school in town. But that's what Professor Tversky told me. Yeah, he misunderstood his problem. Then I was told by another person who is still alive and kicking. Professor Tversky passed away already. So you may think I'm making up the story. The other person is still alive. So the other person was Mendy Gopin, who used to run the Mizrahi in Toronto, in Canada. And the Gopins were brought up. The whole time the Gopins lived in Boston. His father used to be the Balfilo, Roshani Yom Kippur, and my mom in school. So Mendy Gopin used to come visit his parents a couple of times a year from Toronto and go visit the Rabbi. The lady used to, the Rabbi's very old and weak. So he told the Rabbi that they just started a new co-ed high school in Toronto. That's patterned after Maimonides. So he said, the Rav got upset. What do you mean patterned after Maimonides? I founded Maimonides in the 1920s, I think he said. He said, there was no Torah education in New England, period. There was nothing going. If I would have tried to make a separate school, I wouldn't have gotten any students, as it is. That the people were afraid to send their children to yeshiva. They're afraid the children will become rabbis. A rabbi doesn't make a chanos in America. They all wanted to Americanize. They all wanted the children to become doctors and lawyers and so on, and engineers and so on. No one wanted to say. He said it was a miracle that the school got off to a start with the few students that they had being co-ed. He said he wasn't able to make it separate. He said, what did they do in Toronto? For so many years they had separate schools. Who gave them permission to make a mixed school? There's no need for a co-ed school in Toronto. All the people are sending their children to separate schools. These are the two sources that I quote. I don't know, people say I'm a liar. What do you mean I'm a liar? If the guy's still alive, yes, Mendy Gopin. He lives in Eretz Yisrael now. He lives around the corner of me. I don't know. Firsthand, I don't know knowledge of what Rabbi Soloveitchik's opinion was about that. I know my mind was to it. And these are the two versions. These are the two stories that his son-in-law told me. And Rabbi Mendy Gopin told me that he didn't think that that's the proper way to traditionally in Europe and never had COVID. I didn't think it was such a good idea. I remember we were once discussing, Sheba University had a think tank. Dr. Lane established a think tank to discuss the future of modern orthodoxy in the world, in America and in Europe. So they had people from all walks of life. So he invited me to attend the think tank. I came a few times, I saw it's a waste of time, so I didn't continue in life. So one of the participants was Matt Lewin. One of the participants was the president of the World Mizrahi. He just moved to Eretz Yisrael. He's just moving to Eretz Aliyah. What's his name? From Toronto. Forgot his name. So then on one occasion, Rabbi Solvi Berman was giving a presentation on what's the definition of modern Orthodox, centrist Orthodox, as opposed to right-wing Orthodox. He was giving the whole, he was saying, the danger from the right. The danger from the right. The right-wing Orthodox have taken over. He's very concerned about the danger. You've got to be worried about the danger. So Nat Lewin, anybody know Nat Lewin? Nat Lewin is a relative of mine. Nat Lewin is a big lawyer in Washington. He almost got a position as a Supreme Court judge. A famous judge. His father was a prominent rabbi. His father was the United Nations, the Aguda representative to the United Nations. His grandfather, Aaron Levine, was killed by the Nazis. Grandfather was one of the founders of the Aguda. He was the Aguda, his grandfather, Baron Levine, was the Aguda representative to the Polish parliament. The Aguda was a political group, like the Republicans and the Democrats. So his Aguda had representatives in the Polish government. And there was a period of time before the Second World War where they made a coalition government, all the minorities joined together, and the Aguda was part of running the Polish government. Rabbi Tendler from Yeshiva of X-Men, he said, that's why the Polish government collapsed, because the Aguda was running the government. That's his job. Yeah. So Nat Lewin is a very, very modern guy, extremely modern guy. He's not from the Tanoim at all. He only has daughters. So when Solvi Berman said he's afraid of the right, the right is taking over us. And Nat Lewin said, I'm more afraid of the left than I am of the right. Halavai, my daughters would marry boys from their Israel. He lives near Baltimore. He says he wishes his daughters, they didn't marry boys from their Israel. Their daughter very, very modern. Nat Lewin said the danger from the left is much greater than the danger from the right. I don't have a question about that. So remember when Solvi Berman was giving the whole this seven afkaminas between centrist Orthodox and right-wing Orthodox. So one of the afkaminas was co-education. So I remember the Balabas from Toronto, I forgot his name, a very prominent Balabas. He was just appointed president of the World Mizrahi. So he's moving, coming on Aliyah, because he feels that it's not right to be president. He was always the president of the Canadian Mizrahi. So he said, I come from Germany, and in Germany they had co-education, and America is just not going to work. Take it off from the table. Don't discuss co-education. It's just going to be a disaster. He said, we had it in Europe, and it was fine. But in America, there's so much pretense, it's just not going to work. I don't think Rabbi Soloveitchik would insist that you have to have co-education. That's my guess. Based on what I heard, I think that's what he really held. The purpose of the creation was for the Jews, Bereishis, 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 Bereishis. So why did Hashem have to create the world having 99% non-Jews? It's over 99%. The Jews are less than 1% of the whole world. The Jews are less than 1%, but they got more than 25% of the Nobel Awards. Why? Because the Jews do like Avraham Avinu, Gever Tosha. We work with the world on the world issues, on curing all the diseases, and advancing science, physics and chemistry and mathematics, and economics and everything. We work on everything. We have Tosha, and we are Ger. We work on our own Torah mitzvahs. We have to live in our own world. We do things together with the rest of the world, and the Jews have contributed more than our share. If we got more than 25% of the Nobel Awards, we should really get less than 1%, if that's our percentage in the population of the whole world. The Jews do a lot for the world. So why did God have to create the 99% of the non-Jews? It's a humorous question. The Bochum and the Yeshiva use you in the Yester. Why did God create Balabatim? Who needs Balabatim? They should just create Talmid HaChacham. What do you need Balabatim for? So there's an interesting comment that they have in Rabbeinu's Sefer HaChumash. That Hashem said, "Vaytov hayos ha'adam levada esa lo eze kenegdo." We should create Chava, because it's not healthy that all the Marishim should be all alone. So he says we should create Adam. Adam should have a wife. Ezer ken egdo. So he quotes a passage from the Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnayos. Why did God create such a big world? So many people. But here the Rambam says the world was only created for one person. All you need is one tzaddik. And the whole world has a tachas. But if you have only one tzaddik, so who's going to wash his clothing? Who's going to cook his food? Who's going to make a house for him? Who's going to do anything for him? The one person is going to have to do all the work on his own. So we need the rest of the world as an ezer to help out the one side. And we can though, that he shouldn't be mishamay, he shouldn't be stupefied. He's going to be all by himself and no one to talk to, he'll go out of his mind. So you need Kenegda to keep Sadi company. You need Ezer to help out. So the Rebbe Shlomo had to create a big world. The tachlis of the world was taka, the one side of the group of Tzadikim in Israel. So he had to create such a big world where Ezer and the Kenegda. All the questions are good. Okay.
Ready?
Yes.
One
more question.
Please. One more?
One more?
Yeah.
Good one. Which one?
A good one.
What's the halacha on marijuana?
A bra also.
What's the halacha on marijuana and drugs? The Rebbeinu Shel Olam gave us Seichel. He doesn't want us to sleep all day, to sleep away our lives. He wants us to be conscious. But now, Malachim saw, Malachim Olam Yardim, and this week said, when they see Yankel Avinu sleeping, they say, this man is sleeping. Big Shel Harga Adi Marcy, they want to kill him. Then Hashem needs a Olam to protect Yankel Avinu, then Malachim shouldn't kill him. Man is supposed to use his privachav, he's supposed to use his seichel. You're going to go on drugs, you're going to become a lab bardas. That's like sleeping all day long. That's a terrible thing. Marijuana stuff is a problem, and the whole world is going crazy with marijuana. It's causing so much testing for the whole world. I assume that question is just dumb. You have wonderful rabbeim in yeshiva. I know almost all of them. Wonderful rabbeim. Those who are here Shana Alam should try to stay Shana Bet. Those who are Shana Bet should try to stay Shana Gibbon. He should try to stay as long as he can. It's a very difficult world we live in. We live in the United States. It's clearly a Christian country with Abu Dizar, Gil Arash, Chazdomim, and all Gezel, everything, all the Midas Megunas in the world are there. You have to You have to live in that world, but you have to be a gerbatoshim. You have to lead a life of a Jew. The Jew has to lead a totally different style of living. That's where we're in Parshas Chayesorah. Sorah Meinu dies, and they offered Avraham Avinu, B'mitcha Kavarein and Kavaris Meisecha, we'll give you the biggest covenant, see Elohim Atav B'Sacheinu. And he says, no, the Jewish people lead a different life. We live differently, we die differently, we're buried differently. Jews have to have a separate place of us. We certainly lead a different life. You cannot lead a life the way the Rumas are living there. Even Kimisikarim Shebehem, Kal B'chemer, B'mikol Kalim Shebehem, there's nothing to discuss. You should try to stay in yeshiva as long as you can to pick up as much Yerushalayim as possible. You should continue to have atzlach in learning. You should pester the rabbeim for more learning. They'll be happy to give you what they have. You should continue to have atzlach. Thank you.